أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. ألف لام ميم. ذلك الكتاب لا ريب فيه، هدى للمتقين الذين يؤمنون بالغيب ويقيمون الصلاة ومما رزقناهم ينفقون، والذين يؤمنون بما أنزل إليك وما أنزل من قبلك وبالآخرة هم يوقنون، أولئك على هدى من ربهم وأولئك هم المفلحون. آمنت بالله، صدق الله مولانا العظيم.
السلام عليكم. Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the second of the major presentations that we have scheduled. This is going to be given by Haj Abdelhasib Castiñera, who has, over many years, a great experience of living as a Muslim in various parts of the Muslim world and also here in Europe. And he's going to speak to us about the role of the mosque in Islam. And here in particular, again, as you know, our theme, we are focusing on Europe, and he will speak to us about that. Again, a much needed clarification with respect to how mosques are being projected these days in the current climate. And so I'll now hand over to him to really give us a proper and clear sense of the role of the mosque in Europe.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika lahu wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. Assalamu alaikum, good evening. I will dare to speak to you in my broken English. I ask for your indulgency with my mistakes. But inshallah, the meanings of what I intend to say will get through beyond the linguistic troubles. At the beginning, I would like to say that I discovered Islam and I became a Muslim in this city of Norwich. That is about 27 years ago, and I became a Muslim in a mosque, the mosque which now hosts us very near the other side of the park from this venue where we are meeting, the Ihsan Mosque. When I came to Norwich, I was a young man and 21 years old, and what impressed me, what convinced me, what changed my life, and what persuade me that Islam was a valid alternative and a truthful path of transformation for myself and for my society was a living community. People, there was a land-based community in the countryside not far from here, not far from Norwich, at about 12 or 14 miles. And there were guilds and shops, and there was a school. The children were educated in a way that you don't see today. The men were together. There was a strong spiritual energy, and there was also a very intense social activity. And everything was permeated with the wisdom of Islam. I come to you now from Granada, and I am in charge now of a new mosque that was inaugurated last year. And I have been involved over long periods of time, for about 23 years, in that project, in the project of building that mosque. Its finance, its permits, its negotiations with the political parties, with the authorities, with the community. So I have developed through these years quite an experience about it. This is a city, the city of Granada, is a city that still has life memories of glorious Islamic period. The mosque was inaugurated about 500 years after the surrender of the last emirate of Granada to the Catholic kings in 1492, as you all know. And that seems to be a very long period of time, but is only a fleeting moment in the collective memory of the Spanish people, because the memories of Islam are alive in several thousand words of Arabic origin in the Spanish language, in the monuments, castles, mosques, bridges, madrasas of the geography of Spain, in the olive trees, in the perfume of the air of Andalusia. There is still a memory, a very near memory of Islam in our country. The opening of the Mosque of Granada coincided with the resurgence of Islam, with a period of resurgence of Islam in the last part of the 20th century in the West and particularly in Europe. And it also coincided between the 11th September and the 11th of March with a peak period of crisis, of high sensitivity of anything that has relation to Islam in Europe and the West. And that conflict, that crisis, is presented to us as the confrontation, the weighty and mighty confrontation between two extremes, which are religious extremism against democratic values, or terrorism against tolerance. And this is, of course, a fabricated and false confrontation designed to keep us, to keep our attention away from the real issues, and to divert people's attention from Islam as a valid alternative, as the only alternative to the dominant capitalist tyranny. The Mosque of Granada was established by European Muslims, although the community now, the mosque, the congregation, is open to people from all nationalities. The truth of the matter is that the initiative and the effort through all these years has been, the first initiative was from Sheikh Abdul Qadir al-Sufi, who is a teacher of Islam from this land, from Scotland, and who is a European and very much a defender of European identity and tradition, while he is a Muslim teacher, a sheikh. And all the political work with the Spanish authorities and all this effort towards the design of the mosque, the architectural design, the permit with the government, has all been conducted by Spanish Muslims. And this mosque was established with a sense of responsibility of establishing Islam in Europe, not just serving a local Muslim community. And that is with the firm intention of establishing Islam in its fullness and as a working and living reality. I have been asked to speak about the role of mosques in Europe. And the theme of my talk should really be the same as yesterday, the role of Islam or the role of the Muslims in Europe, because the mosques do not do anything. The mosques are done, are built by people. And what matters is how are they built, and what do the Muslims do? That is what is significant. To reflect about the issue of the mosques and its specific role in Europe, I would like to look at several aspects, several issues. One is, what is a mosque? For those of you who are not Muslims, it may be a discovery what a mosque is. Then, what mosques are now these days in Europe and the West in general, in America also? What does Islamic law say about, what does the fiqh, the jurisprudence of Islam, say about a mosque? And from that, we'd like to come to some conclusions. In all of that, I would, if you don't mind, I will refer sometimes to our experiment, to our experience in the new mosque of Granada. During all these long years, since we purchased the plot of land in 1981, that is 23 years ago, I have had personally the opportunity of visiting many of the great mosques of the western regions of Islam. I have been in the Qarawiyyin Mosque of Fez, in the Zaytuna of Tunisia, and Qarawiyyin Kairawan Mosque, south of Tunis, and Al-Azhar Mosque in Cairo. Let's stop for a minute at the closest of them all geographically, the Qarawiyyin Mosque in Fez. At the center of a bustling, noisy, and crowded market area, in the heart of the old city of Fez, full of activity, of people going and coming, selling and buying, locals and foreigners, humans and animals, a labyrinth of intricate passages and narrow alleyways, suddenly a gracious gate opens up to a different world. Inside the gate is a spacious courtyard, paved with beautiful tiles, full of light, and an air of serenity shows itself in sharp contrast with the surrounding activity of the city. To enter, one first takes off one's shoes. Inside, there is a fountain under a pavilion. Doves drinking and flying around. People who come in silence and tranquility and walk slowly towards the fountain for ablution or to the interior of the mosque. The prayer area is accessed from the patio through huge open arches. Inside the mosque, the floor is covered with simple reed mats. And the decoration is very simple too. A forest of whitewashed arches and pillars define the space. At some of the pillars, different circles of students, each with a teacher of Quran, each with a teacher, read Quran, Arabic grammar, history, prophetic traditions, mathematics, or law, depending on the day and the time. In the early periods of Islam, the mosque was also the site of administration of justice. So you could see a circle in which a qadi was examining a dispute and giving judgment. A city council to decide the affairs of the city, and community assembly hall at times of war, at times of disaster, or just for mutual consultation, until those functions were, in history, in the Muslim civilizations, were allocated their own spaces and venues. In remote villages of the deserts and the mountains, and today in Europe in many places, mosques still fulfill some or all of these functions. Let's go back to the Qarawiyyin Mosque. At the far end, near the wall that marks the direction of Qibla, that is the direction to which we pray, people are praying individually, standing, bowing, and prostrating to Allah. The Arabic word for prostration is sajda, and the verb to prostrate is sajada. And the word for mosque is masjid, which means the place of prostration. So that is the essence of what a mosque is. It's a clean and open space for prostration to God. When the time is announced by the muadhin from the top of the minaret, all activity stops inside and to some degree outside of the mosque. People flow in large numbers from the surrounding streets, leaving their shops and activities, and everyone joins in straight lines for the congregational prayer. This takes place five times a day, at dawn, midday, mid-afternoon, sunset, and when the night becomes dark. That is what a mosque is. It's a stopping place in the agitation of life, an oasis always at hand in the middle of the deserts of human life. The mosques of Cairo, Istanbul, Delhi, or thousands of other cities in the lands of Islam will give you a very similar feeling of peace, refreshment, tranquility in the midst of bustling city lives. In a way, the heart of the Muslim community, the heart of Muslim life, is the mosque. Like the heart has the pumping of the blood, so does the mosque pump in and out human beings who prostrate to Allah, who remember Allah, who recognize their submission to Him, and back they go to life, to the daily life affairs. The mosque is the fruit of a community. It's a building and it's an institution that belongs to the natural development and growth of a Muslim society, and therefore it's not a temple. It's not a space for private worship. The mosque is the heart of an active organism, and that active organism is illuminated by the worship of God, by the consciousness, by the awareness of Allah that permeates not only the time of prayer, but the time when the Muslim comes out of the mosque. Every aspect of life is affected by the light of the prophetic wisdom. The prayer is the cornerstone of that wisdom. But the Deen of Islam affects every aspect of the human behavior, personal and social. Ad-Dinu Mu'amala. The life transaction with Allah is worship and is also behavior. Deen is the way you live and behave, not religion in the way that is understood by the Christian tradition. Now, what has appeared as a completely new phenomenon, because mosques are the result of the Dar al-Islam. Mosques appear in the lands where Islam is sovereign, historically. And what has appeared in the last 40, 50 years in the West is a new phenomenon, and that is the emergency of mosques in the midst of a land where Islam is not the predominant ethos, is a minority. This is a consequence of the inexorable wave of immigration accompanied by the growing unstoppable discovery of Islam by the people of the West. In the face of these new circumstances, the Muslims must make an effort, an ijtihad, to redefine what the role of a mosque has to be. And we will look at two type of mosques that have appeared in the West, in Europe particularly, which are not satisfactory, which betray, in a way, the real purpose of the mosque. One of them is what we call the prestige mosques, sponsored by governments of the Muslim countries in the main capitals of Europe, that have produced a false perception of Islam and has not helped the people of the host countries to approach, to have an access, and to understand the reality of Islam. The Mosque of Madrid, for instance, is wholly run by the Saudi embassy in Spain. The Great Mosque of Paris is completely run and administered by the Algerian government. The Central Mosque of London is governed by a body of embassies from the Muslim and Arab countries. They have replaced Islamic institutions with bureaucratic Western structures, and they have become in themselves an obstacle, an impediment for people to find out about Islam and establishing Islam in its fullness in Europe. I cannot emphasize enough how negative and dangerous these official mosques have become. They have failed to connect with the people of the country to a large extent, and they have also failed to call the Muslims to their complete responsibility in this environment. And I will talk about this at some length. The natural fabric of human society is rapidly disintegrating, with consumer values replacing morality. The supremacy of greedy capitalism ruling politics, with the task of educating the masses largely left to the media and the film industry, and the dignity and the nobility of the individual and justice in the social arena are gradually collapsing. This is quite obvious in a society like Spanish society, which was until very recently a rural and traditional society of God-fearing people. But it's also very evident in Britain and Northern Europe, where the natural self-respect of the human being, mutual support, and human concern for each other all have been largely replaced by the state and its institutions. Nevertheless, the good news is that in spite of the dominant political propaganda and the pressure of personal financial anxiety, at least most people are aware, we are all aware, of the intolerable state of affairs which surround us. Most people are able to recognize the hypocrisy of the politicians, the lies of a system that advocates freedom and equality but is really an oligarchy of the corporations, and the intolerable tyranny of the banking institutions that hold the individual, the small business, and the big ones, and entire countries in their clutches. The courage to actively confront this recipe for misery and frustration can only come from one source, and that is inner strength, from certainty, from clarity of vision that breaks free of all fears. That innermost hope in the basic goodness of existence is the departing point of Islam. That is the foundation of Islam. And people who share that innermost will of finding out the real meaning of existence and are not ready to surrender to any false gods, superstitions, and deceits, such as the magic of banking, the injustice of taxation, the trick of paper money, and the scam of democracy, these people recognize each other and come together. The great German writer Ernest Jünger described these people, the people who withdraw in the forest, the Waldgang. And he specified that this withdrawal is not physical withdrawal, it's in meaning. Establishing the Medina, establishing the territory where the deen, where Allah is worshipped and obeyed. Establishing Islam is a living thing. Is living according to the natural laws of existence, is a return to nature, a return to the natural pattern of the human being. And the capitalist institutions must be aware of the challenge that a revival or a resurgence of Islam represents, because during the 23 years that it took us to build the Mosque of Granada, there have been and there still are small groups of ultra-conservative people in Spain, and particularly in the city of Granada, that hated to see a mosque built in the heart of the historic quarter of the city. And one of the reasons why the building of the mosque delayed 23 years was the hostility and the continuous opposition from this ultra-conservative, very small but very powerful people who used every trick in the book, including court cases against the legality of the mosque, which eventually ended up in the Supreme Court of Spain, and they were defeated by the grace of Allah. But Granada is a small city, and with time we ended up finding out the facade of that war against the mosque was taken on by an Academy of Fine Arts. The budget of that Academy of Fine Art was at the time 1 million pesetas a year. It's a very small organization. They spent 5 million pesetas in 1 year, that is five times their yearly budget, in legal costs in undertaking a battle against the mosque. And eventually we found out that the instigator and the financing power behind that campaign was one man who was a banker, the owner, the founder and owner of a bank. So the fact that Islam represents a challenge to their system is not completely unnoticed. Now, if Muslims are going to be faithful to the wisdom that has been passed on to us, the mosques have to be, in these societies, in European societies, arenas of spiritual activity, of spiritual illumination, but also of social activism, of transformation of the societies in which we live. And alongside the mosques, there will appear other realities, not as a temple of worship, but as the heart of a living community. Alongside of the mosques, there will be schools, there will be markets, there will be places for the poor and needy, for the travelers, there will be crafts and guilds and skills, as part of the phenomenon emerging from the mosque. We have mentioned here the prestige mosques run and established and run by governments. But besides them, there are what we call the national mosques. There's a huge number of them all over Europe. And they are established on the basis of national identity. And they really think in terms of the house of the Pakistani in Birmingham, the house of the Turkish people in Berlin, the house of the Algerian in Paris. They are really designed in the form of national associations or national immigrant associations. The time for these national mosques is now over. There can be cultural centers and community associations of immigrants which aspire to serve the needs of a particular group, of a particular community, and to provide the means to preserve their identity and cultural traditions. That is positive and that is legitimate. But the function of the mosque cannot longer be connected to the identity of a distant country. The mosque, as the house of Allah, should be the house of Islam in this land. And that has different conditions and different requirements than attending the needs of a particular national group. The unproductive and already obsolete concept of the national mosque, based on racial, cultural, and national identity, is the consequence of the marginalized ghettos of the economic immigrants. And the experience over the last 25 years has been mostly a negative reaction from the host communities. And also it has given bad press to Islam in many different ways. Now here let me make a margin note. In what way can a mosque be the house of Islam in a non-Muslim country? The answer is that it must function in a way that is beneficial to the city and to the society in which it is established. Therefore, it cannot afford the luxury of only being dedicated to Muslim affairs. It has to be a place of spiritual illumination for everyone who seeks knowledge and seeks Allah. And it has to be a place of intellectual activism and social activity. Those functions can be carried out by the people of the country, by people who know the language and the culture and the background of the society in which the mosque is established, or by people who master the language and understand the environment in which they are, not by people who are just transplanted because they have a degree in Islamic law. That is a big mistake. The mosque personnel must be ready to respond to the queries and the questions and the inquiries of people, from the most basic to the highest level. The mosque has to recover its traditional role of being a madrasa, being a place of learning. The mosques are the ideal arenas for the revival and the transmission of Islamic knowledge to the next generations and to everyone who longs for it. The place of the of investigation and learning of the sources of the deen, but also particularly in Europe, the mosque has to be a place of encounter for the Muslims with the non-Muslims. Every mosque should provide, from the very beginning, from the architectural design, arenas of encounter, arenas of fertile encounter where the Muslims can meet and where the non-Muslims can find out. In a way, this encounter of ours now in Norfolk, in Norwich, is the result of the dynamism of a mosque, Ihsan Mosque, which is hosting us, feeding us, where we pray, where we meet, where we organize our plans, that is near the place where our market is held and near this venue. This invitation came to us, to the Mosque of Granada, and was announced in the Friday prayer. Posters were put in the courtyard of the mosque, and people have come, organized expeditions, get together by literally air, sea and land to be here. So this encounter between us is made possible because of the activism of a mosque in Norwich and the activism of a mosque in Granada. We have seen in the picture of the Qarawiyyin Mosque what a mosque meant in the Muslim city. We have seen also what has happened in the last 40 years in Europe, the prestige mosques and the national mosques. Let us look briefly. I have a lot of material, but I won't deliver it all because it's too detailed. What Islamic law says about a mosque? What is a mosque in the Islamic tradition? First of all, a mosque was not established in the first community of Islam until 13 years had gone from the beginning of the revelation, and the community of the Prophet Muhammad, may Allah bless him and grant him peace, had emigrated from a hostile environment in Mecca to a place where they were sovereign, they were free of the yoke of the atheists and idolaters, where they established themselves and established the rule of Islam in its fullness. That is when the first mosque was built. So establishment of a mosque really means establishment of Islam as a complete way of life. And together with the mosque of Medina, the first mosque of Islam, came the obligation of fasting Ramadan. Ramadan was not compulsory. The fasting was not established until Hijrah. It came the administration of justice and governance and zakat. Zakat was made obligatory when the mosque was built. As I said from the beginning, the establishment of a mosque is not a temple, is not a space for religious practices. Establishing of a mosque is establishment of Islam. And therefore, the mosque cannot replace everything that happens outside of its walls. That will be like a heart without a body. The establishment of the mosque meant establishment of the Sharia. With the Salat came the Zakat, and they are mentioned together in the Quran 28 times. So when the command comes from Allah to establish the prayer 5 times a day in its due times, it comes with the establishment of the Zakat. In the Surah Al-Nur, there's one of the ayats that mentions the mosques. Allah calls them the places that Allah has allowed to be erected for His remembrance. في بيوت أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم في بيوت أذن الله أن ترفع ويذكر فيها اسمه يسبح له فيها في العدو والعصال رجال لا تلهيهم تجارة ولا بيع عن ذكر الله وإقام الصلاة وإيتاء الزكاة. In houses that Allah has permitted to be erected, in which the name of Allah is remembered, in them there are men who are not distracted by the commerce or sales from the remembrance of Allah. And the establishment of Salah and the giving of Zakah, who glorify Him in the morning and the evening. So there are three things mentioned attached to the mosques. Establishing, remembering Allah, establishing the prayer, and paying the Zakat. The ayat descended about the people of the marketplace who, when hearing the Adhan, would leave their business immediately to attend the prayer. But it also refers, in a general sense, to all those who are not distracted by any of the affairs of dunya, any of the affairs of this life, from the remembrance of Allah, from establishing the prayer on time, and from paying zakat. These three things are put together to indicate the totality of the deen and the sharia, which implies collecting zakat and distributing it among the poor. There's another ayat of Surah At-Tawbah, where it says the mosques of Allah should only be cared for by those who have iman in Allah and the last day and establish the prayer and pay the zakat and do not fear anyone except Allah. So only those people can be responsible for the mosques who believe in the last day, establish salat, pay the zakat, and fear no one but Allah. The establishment of zakat has immediate implications. Establishment of zakat requires authority, requires an emir, a community leader. There are other forms of pious charity in Islam, like sadaqah, but zakat has a precise form, and it is collective. Zakat is a compulsory social act that requires a legitimate authority to collect it and distribute it. Zakat ensures that there is a steady transfer of wealth flowing naturally from those most advantaged in society towards those who are most in need. It is a social and a communal action that represents the existence of Islam in its full form. This is powerfully illustrated by an event that took place in the first days of the Caliphate of Abu Bakr, right after the death of our beloved Prophet Muhammad, may Allah bless him and grant him peace. He ordered that an army had to be sent to the tribes who refused to pay zakat. There were tribes who said, we accept Islam, we will pray, but we are not going to pay zakat. Umar ibn al-Khattab, radiallahu anhu, came to Abu Bakr and said, how dare you to do something that the Prophet did not do? That is, sending an army against the Muslims, to fight the Muslims. And Abu Bakr, radiallahu anhu, said, by Allah, I will not permit the salat to be separated from the zakat. And with these words, Umar, radiallahu anhu, was convinced, and the tribe was subdued by force. Strictly speaking, zakat is not a matter of the mosque, but it is a requirement and a priority for all Muslims at this time and in every place, not only in Europe. This pillar of Islam addresses the most serious and acute condition of our time, the power of the financial system. Salat and Zakat have to be inseparably linked together. And they are so in the command of Allah in the Quran so many times, 24 times. The collection of the Zakat by the one in authority, by the Amir of the Muslims in a given region or in a given city, and its distribution to prescribed groups, the most needy and the most disadvantaged of the society, constitutes an essential act on the local micro scale that will ensure the revival of an authentic community with all the elements of Islam in place. In the micro scale of a small community in any small city or town of Europe, the implementation of Zakat means a real contribution to the changing of the world. Every transaction, every business deal which is made with trust and equity, even if it is insignificant, the dealings of good neighborhood, the care and support for each other, the projects where the Muslims come together and take on the responsibilities of life, like education of their children, however small, all of these are steps towards the establishment of Islam as a full reality. And this will bring success in Europe. These are the steps establishing a market, the Muslims coming together and trading together according to the rules of just trade, however small, like our present trade in the forum. They are all steps that will advance the freeing of people in Europe from the tyranny of the capitalist system. On the global micro scale, the simple act of the collection of the Zakat is the way towards the restoration of the sovereignty of Islam. The organic model, the fitra, is that you begin by what is close to you, what's closer to you than yourself. You have to begin by yourself, and then every transaction, every dealing has to be done with the wisdom of Islam. The role of establishment of Islam cannot be left to the authorities, to the ulema, or to the mosque. It is up to each one of us, and it is up to us coming together. Another element of Islamic law, we've seen establishing of the mosque means establishment of Islam in its fullness. We have seen that the mosque requires zakat and requires authority. The appointment of the imam is in the place of the emir. The imam does not have in the Sunni tradition an authority except the authority that is delegated to him by the emir. Fourthly, the mosque is a waqf. The waqf has rules. Waqf is a trust, is an endowment, is an charitable endowment. And that has in Islamic law its rules. The waqf legislation of the mosque demands that the property can never be sold, mortgaged, or rented out, that the mosque should be open to all Muslims without distinction of nationality, origin, or affiliation, and also that every activity pertaining to the mosque should confirm the laws of the land. The mosques in Dar al-Islam have traditionally been independent, governed by a waqf, or instituted directly by the sultan, by the khalif. But in any case, the khutbah, what is said in the Friday's sermon, the beginning of Ramadan, the establishment of the time of beginning and end of Ramadan, supervision of education and caring for the new Muslims, the date of the two Eids, they are all responsibilities that revolve around the authority of the imam. The imam in the traditional texts of fiqh, meaning the amir, the political authority, the civic authority, not. There's no separation between religious and civic authority, except by delegation. The one who administrates the mosque can be someone else, can be an adir of the waqf, but that person will always be under the authority of an emir. The mosque is the heart of the Muslim community. The community has an emir, and there is civic society, schools, commerce, business, transactions, publications, youth activities, and all of that cannot be substituted by the mosque. The mosque cannot replace the Muslim life, the Muslim Medina. In the same way that bureaucratic organization cannot be a substitute for the natural authority of an emir, a committee cannot substitute the personal embodied authority of an emir. Qadi Abu Bakr ibn al-Arabi of Seville has, in his Ahkam al-Quran, he speaks about the wilaya as political power, the power, political power in the Muslim community, And he says it is divided in 20 divisions. Many of them are related to the mosque. The prayer, the zakat, the leading of the hajj. These are functions that belong to the authority of the Muslim and of the Muslim community, and the emir can delegate on other people. All of these functions were embodied in the person of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam during his lifetime, but at times he would appoint other people to lead the hajj, to lead the army in jihad, and at the last days of his life, may Allah bless him and grant him peace, to the prayer he appointed Abu Bakr. Sheikh Abdul Qadir al-Sufi, who is the reason for the mosque of Norwich to be built, and also the person who had the initiative of building a mosque in the heart of Granada, in the heart of the old city of Granada, he has made it very clear to everybody that Islamic law must have a direction. It cannot be left to the arbitrariety of the ulema to implement it as an oppressive code of law, of rules and regulations. It has to have a unified and single direction, and that direction is the full implementation of Islam. The full implementation of Islam means the revival of realities such as awqaf, schools, markets, and everything we have been mentioning. But in essence, it means that we take ourselves the responsibilities of life. We take it upon ourselves to educate our children, to establish justice, and to see that worship of Allah, remembrance of Allah, love of Allah, and gratitude to Allah is established as the norm of the society. Now, the mosque in European community, in European society in the near future will have to become a milestone, a road sign for travelers. Landmarks, like in the medieval Europe, the network of monasteries was a revival of spirituality and trading and knowledge and science. The role has now come to the mosques in Europe. But alongside every mosque, there must be a living community. There must be an Islam based in communal consciousness and not in individualism. An Islam that offers existential and spiritual alternatives, real alternatives, not just dogma and ideas, to the tyranny of the capitalist doctrine and the financial abomination of usury that now controls the world. A community of men and women spiritually committed to the worship of Allah, who do not allow their lives to be defined by consumer aspirations or mass market television values, but only by the love of Allah and gratitude to the gift of life. The footsteps of all of these are not from Granada, naturally. They are from Medina, the city of the Prophet Muhammad. May Allah bless him and grant him peace. And they are not the product of a culture, Islamic or Arab culture or civilization, nor a nation, but rather from the inspiration that comes from the Creator himself. Our need of him is our only real need. And that realization is the only real knowledge. When that knowledge disappears, man is easily enslaved. This knowledge has been under attack by the atheist movement that has made it fashionable to reject God and to reject every form of submission to God and religion. Mosques like this may come under attack by extremist and ignorant and violent people, but there will be lots of people who will defend them and will defend the Muslims, and who will welcome them in the non-Muslim societies of Europe. The Muslims have to be up to their grave responsibility of passing on the good news of Islam, because with our commitment, or without it, with our commitment, or despite our failure, Islam has a very important role to play in the future of Europe. And that's all I want to say. سبحان ربك رب العزة عما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين